Bound to. But we get there first. Ambush the trails and hit them on the way in. They won't look for that.
Which road in will they take?
We've covered that three times now. Ryan will go back in and check out all the trails to make sure we've got the surest evidence.
Right. The word goes tomorrow. Day after that, I'll go into the ghost town on my own and wreck it thoroughly one more time.
I'll come with you.
And me. This is our war.
Fine. Day after tomorrow, we all go up there and check it out.
The following day, the invitation to the meeting was written by Doc Tanner, after some argument and disagreement. The final draft was short and to the point.
The armed conflict between us is harmful to both. I suggest a meeting in the ruined ville of Sometime Never at noon, 3 days from now. I, Cuchillo Oro, war chief of the Mescalero Apache people, will be there with only one companion. If you wish a negotiated settlement, come with one other and we will talk. It is the only way for peace with honor.
Good words.
Three copies were made, each taken by a trusted warrior to a point where the Sekhmen's patrols were known to ride.
Now we wait. If all goes as we hope, we'll go wreck some more tomorrow morning.
The rest of the day had passed peaceably enough. The Anglos were regarded as honored guests, and the women of the Mescalero almost fought for the chance to bring them food and drink, or to wash or mend any of their clothes that were showing the strain of their ceaseless traveling. During the hot time of the early afternoon, when many slept, Cuchillo Oro had come alone and asked to speak with Ryan.
Sure, come in.
Alone.
Christie raised an eyebrow at Ryan, who shrugged his shoulders and walked out of the cool, shady wickiup into the dazzling heat of the long canyon.
Here, by the water we can talk.
The Apache children were shooed away by their mothers as Golden Knife and his dangerous one-eyed Anglo friend sat at the edge of the deep pool beneath the cliff.
First, I have good news. Stones in Face has brought news that one of the messages that he put in a red-painted carton has been picked up by a 10-man patrol of the Pony Soldiers.
Then we know they've read it by now. Good. But from the look on your face, Chief, that's not all you've got on your mind.
You're right, Ryan Calder. I wish to know where you have come from and how you travel. I have sent out scouts, and they have backtracked your feet beyond where we saw you.
How far back?
Past Chilled Lion.
Come on, Cuchillo. How far back did you track us?
To the Rancheria of Hot Death. You came from there.
The redoubt? Yeah, we did.
There is only death there. A great illness lives within, a spirit that slays all. Why did it not chill all of you?
You're right. The rat count was pushing at the top end of the scale, but we didn't stay long.
Cuchillo Oro had drawn the great golden dagger, absently pricking a pattern of small holes in the moist earth by his soft leather boots.
I say again, Ryan Calder, where do you come from?
Ryan rapidly rehearsed a variety of lies, testing them and finding them all wanting. It was one of those rare occasions when the best story was actually the true one. It took a long time to explain about the redoubts and the Matrans gateways within some of them. Ryan realized that Cuchillo Oro was torn between belief and suspicion, wanting to believe the magical tale of being able to travel from one end of the Deathlands to the other in the blinking of an eye.
Life in Drowned Squaw Canyon is harsh, my brother. Times I would like to get away.
Ryan considered mentioning that he believed some gateway chambers could also be used for cron jumps. Doc was living proof that this was so. But he hadn't seen any evidence of them being safe to try, and he figured that they would only confuse the Mescalero chief even more.
There's good and bad about the gateways, but a lot of them are lost or pulverized to dust or drowned under the seas when the nukings came.
And you travel far and fast, just the six of you? It must be a fine life for a warrior, and for his women.
Ryan suspected that Cuchillo Oro was leading up to something, maybe even asking if he could join them. There was no doubt that the Apache was a brave and skillful fighting man. And there'd been times that Ryan had wished desperately for more strength in a firefight. Yet there was doubt remaining. The Mescalero came from a totally different culture. Better a close-knit team of six than a rabble of 60. In the end, Cuchillo Oro reined himself in just short of actually asking the question. So Ryan didn't need to answer it. Ryan and Christie made slow, gentle love to each other during the evening, and a second time around 3 in the morning. Ryan was tugged from sleep by the feather-light touch of fingers on his body, insistently searching and finding. Warm lips nibbled at him, drawing the inevitable response. His body tensed, his fingers locked in Christie's sentient hair, feeling it rustling about his hands, caressing his skin.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Sure you don't want me to come tomorrow for the wreck?
Yeah, I'm sure. Me, JB, and Cuccio. Fewer the better. We won't be gone long.
They lay together, hand touching hand, hip touching hip, for a quarter of an hour or so. Ryan was mentally picturing sometime never, with all the winding trails around it, coming in from top and bottom of the derelict main street, trying to make it clear in his mind where it would be best to hit the Sekhmen.
Penny for your thoughts, lover.
Oh, I'm just thinking it was time we did some more lovemaking.
I do love a thinking man.
Dawn came up with a sulfurous yellow glow. It had begun to get warmer around 5, with an unpleasant humid heat. The clouds stretched unbroken from edge to edge of the canyon. The three horses that were brought out were spooked, eyes rolling. Man whose eyes see more materialized, wrapped in a filthy buffalo robe. His mirrored glasses hid his sunken eyes.
When the pony scent trouble, then the wise man is careful.
Yeah, I'll remember that, man whose eyes see more.
It is not a good day, brothers. Should we wait and do this on the morrow?
Tomorrow's too late. Ryan swung up into the saddle. He'd left the G-12 behind in the wiki-up, carrying only the 6-hour P-226 on his hip. The sky was so low it seemed to press down on the shoulders of the three men as they cantered slowly toward the ghost town. There was no conversation between them. Ryan felt depressed. The possibility of failure lay flat and sour in his mind. This general who had appeared like a night demon out of nowhere, the way the Mescalero talked about him, he had to be something out of the ordinary. Ryan scratched the stubble on his chin, trying to visualize the tall figure with the bizarre mane of golden hair. He was certain, absolutely certain, he'd seen the man before. Somewhere in Deathlands. Ryan spat, clearing his mouth of dust. It was no good. The memory was stubborn, insisting on staying where it was. On the previous visit, sometime never had appeared attractive, a quaint relic of the long-gone past. Now it looked sinister. The tumbled shack seemed filled with shadows, threatening. They tethered their horses to an old hitching post at the bottom of the street.
It going to rain?
When the sky is yellow, it is well to keep your animals close to the rancheria. It may be a storm of wind.
Best get this done fast, then. Fast but careful. I'll go up to the far end and over the ridge beyond Copperhead Row. JB, take the western side and Cuccio the east. Let's go. If there's any trouble, fire a shot. Others come running.
The wind was rising from the north. It brought fine dust to blind Ryan's eye, filling his throat with a bitter taste of nitrate. It rustled through the banks of mesquite, loud enough to hide the approach of any kind of animal or reptile. Ryan stepped cautiously, head turning, sticking to the main trail. He'd passed the stores and shacks he'd investigated with Christie the previous day, not bothering to check them out again. That wasn't what he was there for. JB and Cuccio Oro had vanished behind him, going to wreck their quadrants. Ryan paused near the top of the trail, only a few yards below the crest of the ridge. The old hermit's cabin was to his right as he swung around. He looked back down the street and across the baked land of New Mexico toward the maze of mesas and arroyos that concealed the rancheria of the Mescalero. Because of the noise of the wind, Ryan never heard the Sekhmen who'd crept up behind him, never saw the club that smashed across the back of his skull like a bolt of lightning. For a couple of minutes after he recovered a kind of consciousness, Ryan Carter thought that he'd been blinded. Then he realized he'd been strung over the back of a horse, wrists tied brutally tight, and linked to a length of whipcord knotted around his ankles. Blood had trickled down from the cut on his head and run into his eye, sealing it under a patch of congealing gore. Every step of the animal sent a stabbing pain through his skull. His shoulders and ribs ached, and he felt as if the Sekhmen had given him a good kicking before binding him and throwing him on the horse like a sack of flour. His mouth was filled with dirt. He probed cautiously with his tongue, checking that none of his teeth had been damaged. One felt loose in the gums, but none were missing. What really hurt was that he'd made the classic mistake of overconfidence. He'd underestimated the cunning of the general, and now he was likely to pay the highest price in the marketplace of death. Since they hadn't simply killed him on the spot, Ryan figured that he was being taken back to the cavalry's fort for questioning. Having been second-guessed by Yellowhair, Ryan knew he didn't have much to look forward to. It was obvious now that Yellowhair had suspected a trap the moment he got the message with the peace invitation and had sent out a patrol to ambush the potential ambushers. Ryan wondered what had happened to JB and Cuchillo Oro. Since he couldn't see a damn thing, it was possible that they were hogtied right alongside of him. Gradually, as his head cleared, he was able to pick out voices around him over the jingling of harness and the clattering of hooves on stone. The jolting made him feel sick, and he battled to clear his mind of the pain and nausea. The horse wasn't saddled, which meant a pack animal, which meant, in turn, that they'd come prepared to take a prisoner. Or several prisoners. Unexpectedly, the shaking cleared the scabbed blood from his right eye. For a moment, he was dazzled by the brightness of the sunlight, and he had to squeeze his eyes shut to try to blink the dust out of it.
Fucker's woken, Sarge!
Pull him back to sleep again, Rourke.
Leave him be. General said keep him from being spoiled. I'm sure that's what we'll be doing. Or I'll have the skin off any man does one eye any grievous hurt.
With a great effort of will, Ryan was able to lift his head, neck muscles straining, and saw that he was the only prisoner of the mounted patrol. There were around a dozen SecMen in dark blue uniforms powdered with pale dust, all with Springfield carbines bucketed at their saddles. From his taut, agonizing position, Ryan couldn't make out much more of the men. And it wasn't worth the effort of trying to see. They were obviously going back to their own ville. He slumped forward again, trying to relax against the tightness of his bondage and the jolting of the horse. When next he heard voices, Ryan realized that he had slipped into an uneasy half-world that lay between sleeping and unconsciousness. He wasn't sure how long he'd been traveling. He fought to clear his nose and throat of the raw dust.
The general likes to hear singing me merry buckles. And we wouldn't want to be letting the general down, no, would we? One, and two, and three.
Long years ago, Ryan remembered that he'd seen an old Westie bit about General Custer, riding bravely to perdition at the Little Bighorn, long yellow hair streaming in the studio wind. The tune brought the memory back. It was the marching song of the 7th Cavalry, Gary Owen. Viewing the world upside down, Ryan saw massive wooden gates swinging open and a flag blowing above some buildings, which were made from hewn logs and adobe. The flag was blue, bearing crossed sabers and the golden number 7.
Platoon! Halt! Ryan!
The horse that carried Ryan was tugged around, and then the morning was filled with a sudden, near silence.
Patrol returned safely from sometime never, General. Mission completely successful.
Well done, Sergeant. Take the prisoner inside. I'll see him shortly.
Ryan was on the blind side and couldn't see the speaker, but he knew it had to be the man the Apaches called Yellowhair. Yet again, despite the danger and discomfort of his position, Ryan tried to rack his memory for that voice. A voice that raised the short hairs at his nape. But the memory refused to become unburied, and all that Ryan sensed was that the memory was a bad one. Two men cut Ryan off the back of the horse, leaving his wrists tied in front of him. One was a tall, overweight trooper whose belly hung over his broad leather belt. He carried an old knife scar over the left eye that gave the impression he was winking at you. He gave Ryan a hard shove now.
Walk, you bastard Indian lover!
No, no. You don't want to go falling about and hurting yourself. There'll be plenty of time for that after you've had a nice talk with the general, won't there?
Once he was upright, Ryan had immediately started to try to get his bearings. Cuchillo had talked a little about the newly built fort, but his description was necessarily vague. None of the people had ever been into the fort and lived to tell of it. The compound was rectangular, the long sides about 120 paces, and the short about 80. There was a wall of spiked logs surrounding the parade ground, around 18 feet high. There was no time to take in anything else. Ryan was grabbed painfully by the upper arms and hustled across the square. He had a moment to see that the threatening yellow sky had cleared and the sun was shining.